For all of my sobriety, I have tried to understand women. And I'm still trying. My father, who's an older gentleman now, has told a joke many times more than he can remember he's told. But he said that there is an organization, and I believe him because my father never lies. There's an organization called the Best Liar Award Association, and they have a meeting, I guess, every year. And this guy came up to the stage after about 15 or 20 contestants, and he got in front of the microphone, and he said, "I know everything there is to know about women," and he won the award. And the complexities of you ladies is a miracle and a baffling blessing. What I tell the men in my group is that you are the, and I want to explain all the things that I say to you, but I tell them that you are the heart of frailty and the soul of honor. And what I mean by that is not a condescending suggestion that you are not strong, because all of the physiology I understand is that you ladies are stronger than I or other men in dealing with pain and suffering, dealing with physical ordeals. And thank God, or we wouldn't have a society left. But I do believe that the way that you were made by the man that I believe made us all is to bring out a kind of sensitivity to the world that we don't have, men. We just don't have it. We can learn it. We have the ability to develop sensitive understandings. But at the core, there are some basic things going on. And at the core of women, I believe there are some basic things going on. And if you want to check it out, if you can catch my wife before she leaves, she'll validate this, because we have talked about these things many, many times over our 28 years. When I sit down with the men, one of the early things I ask them about, I said, "What do you know about women?" And they all look at me and say, "Nothing, except I've been married to two or three. I'm struggling with my second or third. And I'm here in your office because she won't shut up. And I need some peace. I need some serenity." And she is sitting on the couch with him, and she's saying, "I need some intimacy." And his eyes glaze over. And he looks at me, and I tell you how many different times I've seen this kind of thing in my office. But the woman is crying now. She's frustrated. She's angry. And when you ladies are feeling whatever the magnitude of emotion is that you're experiencing, it's likely that if you're an adult child, you will have learned to congest it, and if you're from our society, you will have learned to congest it into tears. And when you start crying, we have no clue what it is that's going on. And so we get confused. Well, this woman in my office with her husband one day is crying, and she's talking to me, and she's saying, "We have no intimacy. This man abandons me all the time. He won't talk to me. He doesn't share anything. We've been married for 20 years. I can't get close to him. We have three kids. They're leaving home. I don't know how I'm going to stand it without something going on between he and I that keeps me grounded, because I'm all alone with him." And she's crying now. And she's beautifully groomed. I mean, adult children always look good. The world is falling apart, but we're looking good. And she's got beautifully groomed nails, and she's clawing at the fabric on my couch. Okay? She's crying, but she's clawing the fabric off my couch. And the guy is sitting over there, he's glazed, and he's looking at me. And then he looks at me, and he goes, he winks at me. Now, I'm sitting there as a therapist, my little kid's in there going, oh, shit. I hope she didn't see that, because you know how angry she's going to get? And then I hear my adult voice step in, and he says, "Well, ask him if he just winked in front of her." And I'm having an argument with myself. My kids, "Are you nuts? Are you nuts? You are out of your freaking mind." You know. And then I hear my parent, and they're going, no, that's the message I got from the man upstairs. You got to ask the guy. So I look at him, and I said, "Did you just wink at me?" And she looks over at him, and she says, "Did you?" And she starts yelling at him about his behavior. He always does this. He condescends to me. He discounts me. He always puts me down. He makes fun of me. He and the guys at the golf course are always doing this crap. And when I walk into the golf course, and she says, and I walked into the golf course club, and I saw my husband's best friend lean over and say to him, "Here comes the Nazi. Here comes the Nazi. I'm a Nazi." She's screaming now, and she's levitating on my couch and clawing off the fabric. "I'm a Nazi." And he's looking at me going, "Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot." And what do you suppose he's thinking about me? Traitor. What are you, a feminist? No. And I get this confrontation from guys, and I say, "Look, I'm not a feminist. I'm not a misogynist either. I'm an androgynist. I'm only interested in the idea that you have a responsibility in this dance, and so does she. If you want to take responsibility, take half of it, because that part is at least worthy of your consideration. Whether you're the male or you're the female, I'm saying 50% of this dance is your choice. I'm not saying you can control the other person. We went through that this afternoon. But we are talking about you have to look in the mirror and ask yourself, how am I controlling my choices? Am I happy? Am I doing what I will feel good about when the day is over?" And you talk to people who have been married for all these years living in parallel intimacy. We're not talking about mature intimacy where we get together and we really share. We're talking about living our routines together. We're together, and we're together, but we never touch. And this kind of pain is not uncommon to the adult child because we've lived it our whole lives. So how do you go from being an adult child to being a mature, intimate partner? You can't do it. And when people say to you, "Well, you know, you have to love yourself or you can love someone else," this is prophetic wisdom, but it doesn't include the piece of information that says, maybe the reason you can't love yourself is because you've never felt what it's like to be loved. And until that happens, it's very hard to guess how to love somebody else and really feel that there's a connection between you and that person. So ACA was, as I said to you, the salvation of my soul. It was when I sat down in those circles as we were beginning to organize ACA and said, "Well, we could get together and we can use we can talk." We started to cross-talk as men and as women about our feelings inside the 12-step program. Now, that's a little artsy-fartsy when you look at beginners coming in. You don't want to start asking about their feelings. You want to say, "You know, we'll deal with your feelings in about 20 years. We're going to deal with your sobriety right now. You work this program." But you and I know, as Bill W. spoke of in his letters, that we have to come to emotional maturity at some point or we will not recover. We need to move beyond just the idea of not drinking or not working too much or having too many relationships. We need to start moving into this intimacy arena, and that requires absolute surrender of all of our addictions, all of the medications. So people are lonely, and they get together with who? Another lonely person. And then they're going to be loving couples. They're people who left home saying, "I won't be like my mom and dad. I'm not going to have that in my life." And you do go out and write a different cover to the book, but the story ends up the same. You just do it differently. But you're just as abandoning of one another and yourself as your mom and dad were. Brand new generation of us. So I sit down with men, I say, "What do you know about women?" And they go, "Nothing. I know nothing about women. Can't you tell I know nothing about women?" I go, I'm beginning to get the drift that you know nothing about women." I said, "Where was your dad?" "Well, what's my dad got to do with this?" I said, "Well, men don't learn about women from women. Men learn about women from men." And I said, "Most guys don't come into therapy because they have an intimacy crisis with women. They come in because they have an intimacy crisis with men. We don't, by nature, feel safe joining one another because that's a little gay. You know, that's a little homophobic. That's a little not very masculine." And so when I sit down with these guys, they are all afraid of looking at the idea of sitting in a men's group talking about relationships with one another. Even the homosexual males that I've had in my group are afraid at the beginning to come in and be close to men talking about feelings and relationships without sex getting mixed up in it. So I say to him, look, I need to ask you to start thinking about a couple of things. First of all, at the core, you and I are about three things. We are about sex, we are about service, and we are about silence. That's what men are about, at the core. I'm not saying we're bad people, I'm saying at the core. We get into a relationship, and when you know that relationship stuff starts in the beginning, and you're in lust, and men start sharing, they write poetry, they take you out, they buy flowers, they do all this wonderful stuff, until the novelty wears off. And then they gravitate back to their nature, their core, which is to be linear, to accomplish something, to create their independence. Women on the other side of this coin are very different, so we are ships in the night here. And women, I believe, are at the core these three things. They're about safety, they're about security, and they're about intimacy. They want connection. Women are all about connection. We're not. I mean, I will work on a connection with you if I'm motivated, but until I understand what love means in these three dimensions I talked about at the end of this afternoon's session, which was to talk in regards to the emotional, the intellectual, and the moral commitment to love, the idea of honor, nobility, and self-respect. Until you mature into that, you don't get it. When I first met my wife, she had been married before. She had been married to someone who was abusive, verbally as well as physically. He was also an alcoholic. Her father was an alcoholic. Her mother was an alcoholic. I come from my alcoholic family. My mother was alcoholic. My father was a cloud. He was a flaming codependent. Every time he saw what was happening and the tension rose, he went to work. He was a physician. And he hung out at the hospital. And so when I first met my wife and we started going out, the first date I thought I would take her on was up north, because I love northern Minnesota and I love the woods, and that's sort of my council. And I thought, if this woman, because my first wife hated up north, and I found out that that's not a good idea to marry someone who doesn't enjoy some of the things you enjoy. And I thought, well, my wife today, she was at that time a very, I thought, sort of a Dinah, we called it, uptown lady. And I thought, she's not going to like this, but I have to find out. So we're driving up north, and we're going by, and this is the way it works. You, as a male, are planning a trip. What time in the morning do you get up to go on your trip?
Four.
Four in the morning. And now, there's logic to this. Why do we want to leave at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning? That's right. We could travel the whole day. We can burn some frickin' road, and we can get there. And when we get there, honey, we're going to have a good time. You know this because you went on these hell trips with your parents, and you did them yourself. So you got up, and the kids are all, you know, and the wife is running around trying to get, because that's her job, right, is to get everybody ready. Is she ready?
No.
Why is she not ready?
That's
right. She's taking care of everybody else. And what a man always says, why aren't you ready? It's like, why do you have to carry that frickin' purse around? It's so heavy. It's full of stuff. Junk. And she says, I carry that around because I have everything you need in it. And it's true. Have you got any Kleenex, honey? You got any aspirin in there? Got an extra set of car keys? Some money? So you get up in the morning to go on this trip, and everybody's cranky, and the kids are just upset, and mom's out of sync. But you force everybody. And they get in the car because they don't want a conflict with you. They just want to go. The wife says, fine, well, get in the car, kids. She's losing it. And she's sitting down, and she wants to tear your eyes out. But she's not going to do it because the kids are in the car. So the guy plans the trip, and he has it set down. My car runs on a full tank of gas for 314.5 miles. I have my triptych from AAA, and it says there are gas stations at 312 miles. So we are going to make it to that first gas station in record time. We're going to buzz right through. We're going to pass all the traffic. We're going to get there. How are people doing in the car? This is about 45 minutes into it. Are we there? Are we there, Doug? I have to go potty. I'm sick, Mom. The wife is going, oh, Christ. Could we stop? Could we just stop and use the bathroom? Okay, I'll stop, but we're going to lose 30 minutes. Because there's no gas station right on this road. We got to get off the road. Women are about process. Men are about arrival. Okay? You are in our way because you are slowing us down from getting to where we want to get to, where fun is. Happiness is. Point A, we start the trip. Dad gets up at 4. Kids are upset. Car is running fine, but everyone else inside is a mess. And you're in a hurry. You want to get from here to here. My mom and dad took us on one of these trips to the Grand Canyon. We got to the Grand Canyon in record time. And I remember my dad climbing out of the car. We were just sick. I mean, I was sick. My sisters were sick. I had one sister who didn't go to the bathroom from Minneapolis to Denver. This is not good for you, okay? And she's just green in the back seat. We finally get to the Grand Canyon, and my father jumps out of the car. I've never seen this guy animated before. My father is just a rock. And he stands at the canyon, he goes, is there any question that there's a God? Can you look at something like this and not know there's a God? And we're all going, thanks a lot, God. Can we go to the motel? And I remember that trip, and my father comes running out. I mean, he's just such a hurry now to have a good time. We're in the pool trying to have a good time. And I look up over the edge of the pool, and my father is walking out of the motel. What's he wearing? A T-shirt and one of my mother's girdles. I'm going, Dad, what are you doing? He goes, what? I said, no, where's your swim trunks? Oh, he looked down. Oh, I forgot him. He turns slowly and walks back. The whole audience is watching this, and we're swimming. But he's going to have a good time and jump in the pool. Women, on the other hand, this is how I think you women plan a trip. We get up when? No, if you get to plan the trip. Yeah, if you plan the trip. 7, 8, depends. It just depends. Depends. Yeah. So whenever we get up because it's time to get up. Everybody's ready to go. And you know what? We get going, and we have a triptych. And on that triptych is marked 50, 60 places to stop. To see stuff. Stuff. Fun stuff. For who? But fun stuff for you. So your trip is like this. And so what if we have to use a couple of extra stops for hotels and a couple extra $100? It's no big deal. No big deal. We're not trying to get there and have fun. We're having fun now. Oh, it's just wonderful, isn't it? And you guys, it's like when you go shopping. I mean, do you go shopping with your wives? No, you try to say, oh, well, you know, I got some shit to do in the yard. You know, and you know, it's my football day, and I, you know, it's my day to watch the football games. Fine, you don't have to go. You'll never go. You don't care about anything. If I didn't buy anything, the whole damn family starved. Yeah, that's true. Or we'd eat some kind of pancakes that were already made and frozen crap. So I have started to learn to enjoy process. This is not in my core. I'm not lying to you. I don't feel like doing process. I know that it's a good thing to do process. I know that God operates in process. My kid is in a hurry to get there. So I'm on my way up north with my new girlfriend, Annie, my wife now. And she says, could we stop? There's nothing. I don't see anything. I said, are you sick? Something wrong? Got to throw up? You know, here's a bag. You know. She said, no. I want to. Don't you see those beautiful cattails? I mean, there was just a whole frickin' farm field full of them. And I said, beautiful, really nice. They're going by. She said, well, I'd like to get some. Okay, well, we're into the new romance, and I'm going, yeah, you know, I can stop for you. So I get out, and I get, and as soon as I step in, it's marsh, you know, right up to my knees in mud. And I'm going, oh, hi, honey, yes, baby. And I'm cutting down these things, so I get a whole stack. I must add about 24 of them anyway, not more. How many did we get, about 40? So I put them in the back seat of the car, and we went up north. And we had a great time. And I found out that my wife loved the woods. She was a woman who grew up in Wisconsin. And she took counsel as an adult child like many of us did. Now, this was my day and my time, so we had lots of places to go. Woods, lakes. I mean, I'd get up at 6 in the morning, take a little boat out when I was 9 years old, and I wouldn't come home till it was dark. Why did I want to stay away till it was dark? Because there's bad stuff at home. It's not fun there. And so I found out my wife. We started talking. I said, you like the woods? You were a banker's wife. You did entertaining all the time. I'm kind of a country guy. You really like this? Oh, I love this. She started to cry. She said, this is like when I was a little girl. I could spend all day out in the woods picking flowers and doing girl fantasy things. You know what? I don't know how you guys do it, but you do that thing where you go out and you're all day and isn't it wonderful and so beautiful and you lay in the grass and you do all that stuff. And it just comforts your soul and you swallow that stuff in. So we're having this great weekend. We're beginning to forge a sense of our ability to have intimacy with each other. It isn't the kind that I'd had before. I don't know. I haven't asked my wife this, but I don't think it was the kind she had before. I don't think she really had a man who was already 5, 6, 7 years, I think, by that time sober. And I was already working in the adult child movement. And she was training and counseling, and she was recovering alcoholic as well. So she was learning, and we met at the right time. We were ready to move on to something better. We wanted the dreams that we left with as children about we're going to fall in love, you know, and have family, and we're going to be really close, and we're going to get old together. We are getting old together. And we're going to die together, and we're going to have this life. This was not what you and I set out to fail at when we first got married. And I was talking to someone, came up to me at this conference and said, I remember you talking about an experience when you got married for the first time. And I said, oh, yeah, I remember that too. She said, it was an out-of-body experience you described. And I said, yep. I remember walking down that aisle knowing in my soul that I was doing the wrong thing. But I could not let anybody down now. I mean, the presents had come in. People had flown in from out of state to go to this wedding, and I got married. And I remember walking into the back of that church, and there was a huge frickin' thunderstorm coming, and I went, God's pissed, you know? And because adult children are suspicious. They have magical things. They think God has got nothing better to do than think about smiting you, you know? And so I'm going down this aisle, and the sun is breaking through the back of these rainy clouds. It's this eerie-looking stuff before, like, there's tornadoes. The sky gets kind of greeny. And I step onto that mat they put to the altar, and I left my body. I mean, this was the first natural high I had ever experienced without drugs. And I remember sitting up in the rafters of the church. This is a little spooky, but it's what happened. And I watched myself get married. And I remember when I turned from the altar, I saw myself turn, and I was walking down, and it was like somebody turned the fast motion. I went zip back into my body, you know, and I went, oh, God, am I in trouble? God, am I in trouble? And we got out of the church, and it was thunder and lightning and nasty, and we climbed into the car, and we ran to my mother's house to have this party. And I ran out of the garage to get some stuff out of the car, and I had my first wedding ring on ever. And I ran past this little screen door that has those crescent handles on it. And I opened the door and ran like this, and it perfectly went inside my ring. And I was going 3 or 4 miles an hour by now. It threw my ass right down on the concrete and bent the ring in an oval. Cut my finger. And I looked up and I said, how do I get out of this now, God? I'll do anything. 50% of the gross, if you can get me out of this. And that marriage lasted 3 years. The blessing was I had a daughter from that. So we all look at that and we go, yeah, I go back and do it all again for my children. But my wife and I are now having this new relationship. We're growing. We're mature. We're smart people, like I told you, because you just aren't stupid and get into this mess. And we're growing up now. We're working a program. And we come home, and I said, what would you like me to do with the things? Cattails. And she said, well, put them in the basement because they have to, you know, send it dry, and then I'm going to use them for ornaments and make some stuff. Okay. A month passes. I said, you know, the stuff downstairs, are you going to use it? Yeah, I'll get around to it. I'll get around to it. I said, fine. I go down there a week later, and there is cotton crap everywhere. They exploded. I mean, and the fan from the furnace was, and there was just cotton crap flying all over the place. My kid is gone. Oh, my God. This woman is just like all the rest of them. Set you up, act romantic, love you, care about you, and then what? You think we don't feel abandoned by you ladies? When you get done with your mating rituals and you get done with your bonding, where do you go? We go back to work. Where do you go? Shopping. Or you have children. Or the house. Now it's time to nest. Build, buy, change everything. Do all that stuff, and we're saying, what happened to me? What am I, a walking wallet? You know? I thought you loved me. And you're getting angry. So I come upstairs, and I'm working up a head of steam, but I'm trying to be a decent guy. And I look at my wife, and I go, Ann, there's really a big mess in the basement. I mean, you got cattails everywhere. And she went, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And I said, I appreciate that, but why did you want them? Why didn't you use them? Because guys don't keep things unless we think we're going to use them. Of course, we have lots of things we never use, but we're going to use them. And ask my wife, she says, I know that one day your little boy has tucked in his head that those extra 3 bolts you kept are going to come in handy. And you know what? They do. You know? It's like women keeping shoes and dresses and stuff. And I go, okay, you're going to use them someday. And I said, why did you do that, Annie? I just don't get it. You made such a big deal out of it. And then she started to cry. Oh, my God. Now you're crying. What did I do? I've done it wrong, right? I've hurt your feelings now. No, she said, I just wanted to see if you would stop. I wanted to know if you had time for me, for what I was interested in. Because, you know, I've lived my whole life, and the man I've been with didn't care about what I wanted. It was all about him. So I believe that we are, as males, driven by this instinctual, evolutionary, divine design to want sex, service, and silence as a surviving species. I don't think that that's what we were meant to do as we evolve into the 21st century. But how many men have been raised to understand, in today's society, what it is to love a woman? How many of you guys in this room had your father sit down and tell you, son, we need to sit down and talk about how to love a woman? No chance. My dad would take me aside when he'd see me in the corner cowering because my mother was screaming, and he'd go, you just got to put up with this crap. That's what he told me. You got to put up with this crap. And it's probably they're having their period. I had 3 sisters, so let me think. There was a period going on in my house all the time. And so this was great. It was better than alcoholism, you know. It was just crazy women. So making room for a woman was something I never had thought about. I thought, well, what benefit would that serve me? And my kid spoke up right away, and he said, well, if you give her all the stuff she wants, then she'll have sex with you. And I went, yeah, that might work. And I said, no, Bob. We're talking about something else. Something else. Why would we do for our wife, our love, the things that we do? And then I heard this voice inside me, and this is where sometimes I believe I hear from my maker. And he said, so you will know love. So you will know love. That's why you give this to her, because I gave her to you. I gave you everything. I gave you to her. You need to learn this. So I started to say, okay, if you ask, I will do it. But I don't know why, because I don't feel like it. Now, I'm an adult child. I think I have been profoundly broken in the emotional attachment area. As a child, I didn't make this contact. My mother was one of those raised on the Spock theory that you don't touch your children. You don't take them out of their crib. You don't overstimulate them, as I remember my mother telling me once when I was hugging my nephew. She said, don't overstimulate the boy. You'll make him gay. I couldn't believe it. But this is what she was doing. And so I realized at that moment that I had never been touched. Now, my father is a stoic guy. He always shook my hand. He never hugged me. Never remember him hugging me. And when I was growing up, when I was 2 and 3 and 4, he was in a sanitarium recovering from tuberculosis. So there was nothing there. And to this day, and I tell my wife this, I love you more in my head and in my soul and in my conscience than ever I have loved you in my feeling life. I get all of my feelings from connecting with you. But you know, when I'm busy and when I'm on my arrival stuff, I have no time for anybody. This is one of the legacies of adult children. And if you're a male, it's a double whammy, because by nature you're self-centered. So your struggle and my struggle is to understand that this isn't about learning first about women. That's important, and I want you to learn about it. But it's most important that you get together with some men who know more than you do, who can talk to you and you will listen to. So when I honor my father, I think about lots of men. I don't think about just my dad. And I understand that metaphor now about honor thy mother and father, that how many parents do you folks have? The people that gave you one little thing or another little thing, you collected 100 things from people in the program. And you love them and feel as connected to them as maybe you do to your parents. But you honor them. And I tell the men in my groups, I say, look, the rock and the foundation of my life and my character are not rock and stone all from my father's quarry. And I know that you came from the same deficit I did. You don't have memories of your father teaching you about women or sex or relationships or emotions. What do men do with their feelings? My father used to say, men who have feelings are out of control. And I remember talking to myself one day and wondering if I was nuts, because I was talking to myself. You talk to yourselves? And you do talk to yourselves, because the only people who don't do this are dead. And I went to my dad and I said, Dad, do you ever talk to yourself? Looking for some bonding, male bonding. And my dad went, no, never talk to myself. What did I think? I'm weird. I'm a weird guy. I talk to myself. And I remember a year later, so I was in the basement talking to myself, because that's what I did. I sat in the basement. I was 12 years old. I had my six-pack of beer. I'd sit and watch the late show and get drunk and talk to myself. My father came down. I'm clanking beers and hiding it all over the couch. He walks through and he says, are you talking to yourself? No, Dad, I'm just shit-faced and having a good time down here. Never even asked me about the alcohol. Never even noticed it. I went, Dad's not home. He's never been home. Okay? So I understand that in me there is this struggle always, and I don't know about the rest of you. I can only speak for myself this way. But I've heard other men resonate to what I've said to them, that it's hard to feel that emotional connection. And so guys say, well, what happens when I don't feel like I love my wife anymore? I say, you love her because it's the right thing to do. Huh? What's right about that? You're lying, you mean, he says to me. I said, yeah, you lie. You lie to your wife. But I'm an honest guy. And I said, no, you're brutal. You're unkind. You're immature. You're ignorant. Guys hate that when you tell them you're ignorant. But they only hear it from a guy, because you women have been telling them that all along. I am not ignorant, you. We are about this game of hunt and seek and arrive at and accomplish our gratifications. So the paradox for men in recovery long term is to come to the idea that nobility, honor, and self-respect are the substitutes for the externalized world that you sought gratification from. that loving your woman would be a process experience of gratifying, of being gratifying to you because you were being a good man. And then you know what happens? What do you women do when we're really connecting to you? What do you want?
More
of it. And what do you bring?
More
what?
Sex.
Service.
Silence.
My wife gives me all sorts of space. But I don't believe to this day that she's doing that because she's afraid of me. I think she's doing that because she knows I love her. I act that way. I do those things. She is my commitment, second only to myself. So I say to the guys, look, it's about, now first you got to wrap everything in God because I don't know where God isn't. He's everywhere. But I say it's about a selfish program, grow up inside, mature inside, be responsible for your own self-respect, honor, and nobility. Seek those things out because they will carry you to the end of your days. If you do this, then you will love and you will succeed in business and you will succeed in your friendships and your family will love you and honor you. And they will follow you. Not because you've led them and yelled at them and screamed at them, but because women are, by nature, seeking safety, security, and intimacy. They don't care about this. This is us. They care about this. This is where life happens. Where would we be if women didn't stop to make homes? If you look at Native American cultures, for example, a long time ago, the whole metaphor of a male walking ahead of the female was not disrespect or second-class citizenship. It was about honor. It was about, we are expendable. They are not. They carry the soul of the tribe. They carry the spirituality of our future. They carry all of that nurturing ability. You're not asking a question?
No, I'm stretching.
Okay. He changed his mind, really. No, I'm teasing. So I'm saying to you, look, if a woman is asking for safety, and I tell the guys, it's in this order, safety first. And they say, well, what's the difference between safety and security? I say, well, lots of women have men, not just their own careers, but they have men who have successful careers, they're physically sound, good genetic pool, okay? People who would make good children, at least good-looking children, smart children, they have that kind of security. But safety is about the emotional connection. And so you can have all the security in the world and the gilded cage routine happens. But you don't have any safety if you have no emotional connection. So when a man meets a woman, where do we go first? Where do our brains go? They go south. And we say to ourselves, I have to get to know you in the biblical sense. And then I can decide whether or not there's a future for us. Women, on the other hand, are sizing you up, and they're subtle. You ladies are subtle. And you know, you're more vicious than we are, too, by the way. You are. Admit it. Because why? Because there's more connective tissue between your left and right hemisphere. You have this thing called a corpus callosum that's a four-lane highway. We have a one-lane. Okay? You guys are going like this all the time. That's why women are always out of focus for us guys on the one lane. Moving too fast for me. Moving too fast for me. What do you mean, where's this relationship going? We're going to dinner. And we're going to go home and have sex. Then you're going to go home and I'm going to get up and go to work. This is the way it is. By nature, I say, so don't apologize. I don't want women to apologize. I want them to own know that they are doing this. And that when they talk to us, they don't talk to us from a mother's position. Now, how many guys were raised by their fathers genuinely, sincerely, consistently across their developmental years were raised by their father? How many of you survived because your mother took the time to care for you? Now, you're a little boy, right? And you're dealing with mom. Mom smiles when you're cute. Mom loves you when you're sick. Mom cares for you when you're needy. When you need to be picked up after a failure in life, mom's there. Mom understands. So you grow up thinking that this is what women want. And then you go out and you find your mom, and you marry her. And then you try to be cute, and she gets tired of your cuteness. She doesn't like the way you deny when you're wrong. She doesn't like that you lie because you were late coming home and you took the first 20 minutes on the ride home to make up a lie about why you weren't home on time, when the truth was you weren't even thinking about her. You weren't thinking about getting home on time. You just gave her a target date because she needed to hear something on the way out the door. But you didn't show up. And you guys walk around your homes. You're so proud of yourself. I was proud of myself. I bought the home. I bought my first home. And I remember my wife nesting and setting everything up. And then I come along and I meet Ann. And Ann was boisterous. My first wife never said anything. My first wife was my father. She was like a cloud. You reached in, you saw her there, and you looked for something tangible, and you'd reach, pull your hand out, and it was just moist. Just nothing but air. So I was looking for a woman that had some backbone. I found Ann. God, did she have a backbone. Then I thought, God, I married my mother. Crazy. Oh, my God. And I remember telling Ann, I said, Ann, just understand this. If you go crazy, I'm divorcing you. Okay? Just want you to know that. If you get fat and ugly, I'm divorcing you. I'm not having this shit in my life again. I mean, my little boy was on a rampage and afraid. Oh, my God, how could I commit? And when the first time Ann said to me, I love you, Bob, I went, what am I going to do with that? She looked at me and she says, I don't care. You can't do anything with it. It's mine. Oh, my God. And then she started to pursue me. What's this all about? I got to go. I have a trip to make. Don't I? She was persistent in making connection with me. And I remember the first time she touched me. And my mother was someone you couldn't touch. If you touched my mother, she just would freeze. And if you tried to hug my father, he would freeze. And I had to teach my father to hug in this program. I hugged him one day. It was my mission to go home on one of those guilt holidays for Thanksgiving. And my whole idea was, now I got a program. I know what the hell's happening here. And I'm going to hug the shit out of my father, you know. And I walk in the door, you know, and he's standing there doing his normal thing. And he puts his hand out, and I brushed it by, and I wrapped my arms around him. And I squeezed him really hard, and I felt him just go like this. And then I heard his joints creak. And he lifted his arm. He got it behind me, and bam, 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 he hits me on the back. Not with his whole hand, with this part of his hand. Why? Because he's doing a lung exam. And he says to me, you know you got good lungs, son. I let him go. And I went home, and who do you suppose called me an hour later? My mother. And why do you suppose my mother called me?
What was that all about?
Your dad wonders if you're okay. I go, well, put the damn man on the phone. Oh, he doesn't talk about those things. You know, Dad. So finding a woman who's not your mother, or finding a woman who you don't expect to mother you. Do you want to sleep with your mother? God, that's an ugly image. You know? And I say to women, do you want to sleep with your son? Yuck. So stop slipping out of role. This is the emotional recovery we're talking about, the emotional sobriety, where you step in as an adult person and you remember who you are. And as little girls, were you not trained to think that we were kind of simple? Yeah, we're just simple, not very complex. You know, women like well-groomed. Men like well-groomed women. They like clean women. My wife told me this, that her mother told her all this. And you know, it helps. It's nice. But do you want a woman who has no personality? Do you want a woman in your life, guys, who doesn't know how to say no to you? And say to you with all the anger that is in their soul, I am so angry at you, I cannot really articulate politely at this point. Wouldn't you like to hear that? But I'm not going to be a little child and yell and scream and have a tantrum, because you know what? I love myself enough not to sink into that crap with you. Now, how do you guys feel when your woman confronts you with this kind of stuff? What's your little boy saying? Come on.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Mommy's pissed. And what do?
Got to get some flowers. Buy her a new piece of jewelry.
Guilt gifts. Try to woo her back with little boy gifts. Instead of stepping up to the plate as a man and saying, you know what? You were right. I'm out of line. I was angry. I was feeling sorry for myself. This is something we really don't want to admit as men, that we feel sorry for ourselves. Oh, my God, that's just not a masculine thing to do. And I'm working with the guys in group all the time. I'm saying, so you were basically sucking your thumb, pouting, and feeling sorry for yourself. And they go, well, I don't know if I'd put it just like that. I go, well, how in the hell would you put it? Because this is what little boys do. So I understand, and then the other guys in the group have come further along and say, yeah, we know why your wife wants to rip your face off. Because you're acting like a child. And I'll tell you, this is my experience and practice. I have never seen a woman start in earnest her recovery who's married until the man who she's married to stops abandoning her. Because her focus is where? As a little girl, unrecovered, where's her focus? On the relationship. Fix the relationship. Women don't want to see their relationships fail. That is something I have come to understand about them, about you ladies. That you will do anything and almost everything you can to try to get this man to love you back. And you always say these things. I know, Bob. Down deep inside, there's a good man.
Deep.
Deep.
Very
really deep in there.
Really deep.
And by God, I'm going to find him. And if it kills me, you think I'm going to do all this work and let some other bitch have him when he figures it all out? Women fight for the relationship. They fight for the family. Where do guys go when they don't feel good about it? The bar, work, another woman, have an affair. And you know what? If a woman has an affair, we never will forgive you. Trust me, we won't. I tell my wife that. If you ever have an affair, forget it. It's over. I won't be able to get the image out of my head. What image would that be? Sex. Where does that come from? But if a man has an affair on a woman, what do you ladies do?
Forgive them.
Give them another chance until they do it twice. But most of the time, women will give us a chance, and they will forgive. They won't forget, but they'll forgive. This is not something we do. I'm not sure where to tell you to take what you're hearing from me tonight, other than I would like you to practice the idea that if, as a man, you believed what I'm telling you is true, then you would start to address your lady, your partner, your lover with the issue of safety first, emotional safety. You would bring her the truth about how you feel, not your whining about life and not your failure to be a man who you think is worthy. These aren't things women want to hear, by the way. They don't want to hear about that stuff that we feel we're going to fail at because they will get afraid. They want to hear that we're telling them that we're struggling with something, but we're handling it. We're talking to people, and I want you to know, because you're my wife, that this stuff is going on. And I'll let you know as it develops what it is that I have to do. And to write a letter, a note, poetry to your wife, to do that deliberately, not because you feel like it, but because you love her. Do this. Grow up. This is what I say to the guys. Well, you want me to lie some more? And I go, yes. Lie until you understand what it feels like to be in process. And I have learned what it's like to not be alone. I know how to be alone. I can do that easy. When my wife goes on vacation with her sisters, I shut down. I'm on my own. There's no other women that come into my life. I don't have room for another woman, trust me. But I'm saying I just shut down because that's my life. I know as a man how to do this alone. My wife, when I leave town, what does she do? She goes off with her girlfriend. She connects with people. And who calls me first? Do I call first or does she? She does. To reach out. Now I do this better. And I'm getting better. It's only been 28 years. I am working on this project, and I plan to be with my wife at the end of my days. So I tell people, look, you can live this way if you want, because it's in your nature and it's easy, and men of our generation and the ones that came before us, they were all lazy. Not lazy because they didn't think they had responsibilities, but they didn't know this was a responsibility. Being a husband is a title, but nobody gave you a job description. Nobody taught you what that meant. Being a wife is a job. But who taught you women how to really be a wife in the 21st century? You fought like crazy. I tell people, look, the last 35 years, you ladies have brought it together. Good for you. If you hadn't done that, you would have never gotten where you have gotten to. You fought and you paid for it with your ancestors' bloods. But you got here. Men, we haven't had a movement yet. Okay? We need a movement. We need a big movement. We need to get together and we need to start talking about what is the responsibility of a male to a female. And the other thing I'd say to you ladies, in fairness from a male perspective, I think you've done so much to make this world a better place. But I don't think you know much more about us than you did 30 years ago. And why is that? I don't know. Maybe it's because we won't talk to you. But I'm suspicious that that's why. And then when we fear you, we go underground. So I know there's tons of chauvinists still alive out there. They're just quieter now. They do it in little corners now. They don't speak out loud about their real feelings and thoughts. Lest they get drunk, get picked up by the cops, and start spewing out the pus of their youth and the ignorance that they carry in their soul. So here it comes to this place where you ask yourself, is this a burden to be in love? If it's a burden, you will fail. It is a privilege to be in love. To find that kind of connection is a privilege. You talk to men today about this stuff, they go, are you like a... gay guy? What's all this touchy-feely stuff about? I said, it's about my soul. I'm telling you guys, life is about saving your soul. That's what it's all about. It's all about God. And for you ladies, it's the same thing in a different dance. It's about your soul and it's about the man upstairs. So if you seek to find honor and nobility and self-respect, you will not open the door for your wife because it's a condescending thing. You will open the door for your wife because it is a part of your respect for her. And she will respect it and not think you a chauvinist pig because she knows you because you shared your feelings with her. She knows why you do this. This isn't to get something from her. My wife loves me in all the ways that a woman can love a man regularly, not because I apply things with her, not because I set things up to try to get her to give me what I want, but because I'm a selfish guy and I know if I do this, I will feel good about myself. And then, a miracle, my wife brings all these things to me because it's in the nature of women to bring this to the relationship. They starve to have the place to bring connection. When you ladies talk to each other even, while it may be topical antiseptic, you are talking. We don't talk. How about them twins, you know? That kind of stuff is where it goes with men until we get into a group and we start talking about intimacy. Now it gets scary and now it gets hopeful. Now we begin to grow and mature. And when the guys bring this stuff home, and I love this part, I get these guys to start lying, okay? And they come back and they go, you know what? That works. That shit really works. And I go, oh, so you mean you got laid? Yeah, I got laid. What do you think I meant by it works? I go, okay, I want you to keep doing this for another 3 months, and I hope you get lots of sex, but I want you to try to do it without wanting anything. Oh, boy. That's really going to be hard, Bob. And I said, I'm not asking you to not be a little boy in your soul who wants those self-gratifying things. I'm asking you to be a man who has self-respect and looks in the mirror and says, my wife came to me because she feels safe and she feels secure and she wants to be connected to me. And that is the validation that you really want. Not that you got laid, but that you actually connected with your wife. And you feel like an adult man. It's now a privilege to love someone. I don't care what the sexual orientation. I am talking about loving out of nobility, honor, and self-respect because it's the only stuff that lasts. Life passes. We get old. Beauty fades. All these things into the twilight. But at the end, what do you want to be thinking when you look back? The last stage in life, we talked about the first six stages this morning. The seventh stage is a thing called generativity. Generativity is now we're probably in our 50s, those of us who are in this phase, and we're trying to bring what we've learned to the generation behind us or our peers who are still living in the dark ages. And that we need to do that. It's like the program says, you got to give it back to keep it. In order to reinforce your understanding, after all the novelty of life wears off, and you've lived long enough to go, this is no big deal. There's no new mountains to conquer. It's not about so little time and so many women. It's about I have lived my life. Now what do I do? And generativity then inspires you to the last stage of your life. That is, either you will despair as you see the twilight coming, or you will be resolved and you will be going, you know, Lord, that was a good journey. That was a good trip. Yeah, and I'm ready to go now. And I have no regrets. I have no fear of what's lying beyond this domain of life. In fact, you know what? I'm kind of celebrating that the mystery is going to finally get answered. So this kind of idea is what I want to do. I want to finish this life well. And I tell my Lord, I say, you know, when I die, there's only two names I want on my lips. Yours and my wife's. And if I can leave that way, everything will be perfect. I want to be conscious when the end comes because I don't want to miss it. It's like I said to people, you want to miss the sorrow of this life? Then you can't have the joy. You have to take it all. It really is the same in the end. Well, the joy feels better. I go, yeah, it does. But you know that sorrow makes it clear when you have joy. So when I have been through the hard times with my life and my wife, and we've been through some things, I say, God, help me remember these dark days so that I will know when it's good. I don't want to stay morose in life. I don't want to see that life was unfair. I say to my clients, life is a veil of tears. I'm not morbid. I'm an adult. You and I, who have lived long enough, know that what I just said is true. So what's your challenge? Your challenge is to see beyond that veil and see the joy of your life. But you can't, in the paradoxical sense, if you're not willing to accept the sorrow of this life. If you've matured at all, you understand that outside this building, there are billions of people. And they, like you, have pain. They, like you, have sorrow. They, like you, have fear. They have all these things going on. And they are committing wrongs against their own soul and their brother's soul. They are doing these things because they are children. The trouble in this world, to me, is because there are children running around in adult bodies. And they're afraid. And there's no one to comfort them, come to them in the darkness and say, I'm right here, son. I love you. God loves you. So do I. This is not what we're going to do. We are going to seek out that fourth alternative I talked to you about this afternoon, and we're going to do the right thing. Because, my kid says, why are we going to do that? That son of a son, see, he deserves it. And I say, because, son, and I talk to myself this way, because, son, it pleases me to please the man. That's what I'm doing. And where I go, you go. Too bad. Sit down. Fine. But I'm not going to like it. You don't have to. And then, of course, you do the right thing, and what happens? You feel better. Does the world change? Maybe not. But it probably did in some minuscule, invisible way. What you do ripples across time. And I don't know how many of you will take what you did this week and touch someone's life, but I know it's going to happen. I just know that's going to happen. It's part of the plan. You don't have to understand that you're even doing it. when I meet a new person, I ask myself and I say, okay, God, another stranger. What did this soul come to teach me? I'm not trying to be humble. I'm trying to be smart. And in that you find humility. But where do you finally get humility? What's that word, humility? What's the opposite? Humility. Humiliation. You get humiliated enough. You look down the bridge of your nose, and I tell the guys this, every time I ever look down the bridge of my nose at anybody, that's where I ended up. And I found out that that was wrong. So when I see someone in trouble, or I see someone who's left less gifted than I or privileged than I say to myself, God, help that person find their gift and make it so that they would experience life and joy and they would finish this life well. They'll finish well because that's a great thing to have, finishing well. And I say to you in the end here, I want you to believe that you have a mission. And the mission is to put out better than you took in. This is your job. If you don't do that, you will die in despair. And I don't care that you may have never seen it before, but when that day comes, and if you're conscious to the knowing of your end, you will see a picture of your failure. And there will be despair, and it's too late. I don't want it to be too late for anybody. I don't want that to happen to you, not to me. So I'm not a religious man, but I have this deep faith that there is a power in the universe that operates and connects us all, and that we are not much separated one from the other for all these gender things that are different. Men are inspired by you, ladies. Ladies, I believe you are inspired by us. I think when we do it together, we make something better. We just have the ability to do that, not alone, but together. Two people loving each other makes the world a better place. But being a lover means you have to be an adult person. You can't be a child. And when someone says, leave those childish things behind, I do not believe that you lose your child in your soul. You take him or her with you. They are eternal. They never grow up. It's not like your biological children. And you love yourself because that was your charge. Some people tell me in the beginning, I wish I could get rid of my child. I wish I could get rid of that plaguing noise in my head. And I go, you know, if you lose that, you got nothing left. Who do you suppose, if you were to assume for a moment you were God, who would God talk to in the soul of this three-dimensional creature he created? A child, an adult, or a parent?
A child.
Why? Because they're receptive. Because they're magical. Because they believe things that are there and aren't there. They understand somewhere inside their God-centeredness, their soul. Inside of you, I tell my clients, is God knowledge. God knowledge is hidden from you in the mystery of birth into the melees of life, but he will provide you with an opportunity to hear him through the noise and the din, the cacophony of crap. I believe that he started this whole thing in motion. It's what I call a perfectly fluid and random mosaic. And if you start in Switzerland or you start in Mexico and you're a seeker and you try all through your life to be the best you can and seek out information, you're going to run into the teacher. Teacher's going to come to you. And God, you know, can make an idiot speak the truth. So if you're looking down your nose at someone who you think doesn't have a brain to share with you, then you're missing the opportunity. Not just to see the love you missed out giving that person, but that that person had something to give you, and you walked right by. Someone said once, who's now dead, and I can't remember his name, so I'll ask for forgiveness in that, but he said that every encounter in this life that lasts longer than 30 seconds is a divine encounter. And you have to stop then and think about it. What did this soul come to teach me? I ask myself that every day I meet a client. I go, okay, God, I suited up and I'm showing up. But I have no clue what I'm going to say to this person today. So help me be a student and ask, what did they come to teach me? And I believe in listening to them. And a good therapist, by the way, does not lead a client. They follow them. They follow them all over the place because it's process. And they will show you the places they want to visit, finally. And then because you've been paying attention, you will notice that they keep bringing you by this pile of rocks, by this pile of dung, by this pile of gold. And you'll stop and say, you know, we keep passing this by. I wonder, could you tell me some more about that? Really? You think that's important? I don't know. It just feels like it because we keep coming back to it. I've been following you around and you keep bringing me here. So I don't know how you're going to do your life in the end. I pray you will finish well. I pray that you will, in the end, understand that you can't change the world if you don't have the power to believe you can change yourself. And that God has the rest of it in his charge. He will take responsibility for it. You know this program. I was looking at you all this morning and this afternoon and thinking, these are the maturing people inside this program. The ACA movement is not as strong as it was 20 years ago. We've lost our youth. We're getting older elders now, but we got to get the children back. I don't know when that's going to happen, but things tend to cycle around. In AA, there's lots of wisdom. In Al-Anon, lots of wisdom. But those people keep coming because they think they're going there for alcoholism recovery, codependency recovery. But this movement has lost something. I don't know how else to tell that to you. When Bob Ackerman and I, who are very good friends, and Sharon Wagscheider would talk, we'd say, where are the speakers? Where are the people who have all this passion about their recoveries? Why aren't they going out there and talking? Why aren't they trying to start a new meeting? Because they can't do it alone. They have to be with people. I'm glad that I got invited back. I was here, I think, probably 6 years ago. I'm just glad you're still doing it. You know, and I said to my wife, you know, when I get an invitation to go to an AA or an Al-Anon or an ACA meeting, I know that that's divine. I just go, yep, I'm going. You know, I don't know how I'm going to get there or how it's all going to work or why I got asked, but I'm going because I know I'm supposed to. So I show up. I am privileged, I am fortunate, I am blessed, I have found love, I have experienced sickness and health and death and children, I have grandchildren, and I hope I have lots of years left to do this stuff. I don't know if I'll see any of you again along the road, but I will ask that you keep me in your prayers, I will keep you in my prayers, and ask that God will show you all the things you need to know, all the things you need to see. But be courageous, keep showing up, because someone's got the information you need. The God knowledge in you will be awakened when the voice that has to speak to you speaks. And you won't even know it's coming. But it'll cut right through you, and you'll go, that thing I just heard is important. That thing I just heard is about me. I got to listen to that. And then go and try to understand it. God bless you. Thank you for your time, for the privilege to be here. It was a joy. I hope I get to see you again sometime, maybe. If I don't, I'll see you on the other side. I love you. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you.